Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Thank you, Brian. And we are blessed with another day on Vachon Island. I can't think of a more perfect place to be. So I'm glad you're here with us. And joining several briefings today, we have Truman O'Brien, we have Lynn Kerrigan and Bruce Hallman, all in addition to myself, Kevin Jones. And so, hey, how's everybody doing? Bruce, hey, what's up with you?
Same old, same old. back into the hunkering down mode, you know, with Delta variant sort of running rampant even on Vachon. I mean, we've had over 20% new cases in the last month. So it just is sort of that reminder that this pandemic is not anywhere close to being over. And, you know, being fully vaccinated, I'm less concerned, but I also have a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old who are not vaccinated in and out of the house every day because they live right across the street. And, you know, I'm more concerned about my grandchildren than I am about myself. But we are in a new phase of this pandemic, and it's not time to be complacent.
That's for sure.
So, Bruce, is this an example of the famous quote that we hear so many times, that history repeats itself?
It is.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And it's happened with every pandemic in every age going back forever in human history. It's just one of those things.
All right. Lynn Kerrigan, how are you this fine morning?
Hi. Good morning, everybody. Well, up and down like everybody else. I was pondering a couple of things this morning that we can no longer use the phrase, God willing, and the creeks don't rise. You know,
it's happening.
It's happening. And, you know, the other thing, Bruce, that I wanted to add to what you said about the new cycle of this pandemic that's rolling around, I heard on NPR as I was waking up this morning, that a bunch of scientists have gotten together. This has not been announced through the CDC, but it is picking up steam in the scientific community that they feel like we all should be getting boosters. I shouldn't say all, that even the Moderna and the Pfizer regular people should now be kind of getting booster shots, that they're starting to kind of think that the immunity wanes at about 8 months. And, you know, we didn't know any of that. We were in the middle of some kind of historic moment, you know, where we're trying to survive despite the pandemic and forging on ahead and learning the science as we go. And, you know, I'm willing to do whatever the science says, but kind of the main gist of the commentary this morning on National Public Radio, I listened to both UW, KOW, and KPLU in Tacoma. The gist seemed to be that, you know, why is that not being announced? It's not formalized yet. The commentary is running ahead of the formality of how to make this kind of announcement and how to put it into operation. So stay tuned, people, and we just have to roll with it.
Well, you know, it is a novel coronavirus, and totally, exactly. Like you say, you know, the science reveals itself to us slowly. But the messaging is quite interesting, and of course, we plan to get into that as we talk. Before we do, though, Truman O'Brien, now sporting those New England Patriots colors on his airplane. True.
Gosh, I know, I'm embarrassed.
That's the last time I'm going to dig you.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate that.
How's it going, my man?
Well, I'll tell you what. I recently came across a couple of folks who were unvaccinated and kind of proud of it, and I really let into them. I mean, I let them have it. And I've been reading about how we need to be compassionate and we should work with these folks and try and cajole them. Well, you know what? They're the enemy, man. I mean, they're consorting with the enemy. I think that it's really a bad decision on their part. But. Just this morning, I've had a revelation, and here's what it is. You know, humankind is really kind of messing with evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Because with modern medicine and our social structure where we take care of the folks who can't take care of themselves, you know, all of those things really is messing with evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? This virus, this pandemic, is working to take care of, you know, the old survival of the fittest. Well, it's not survival of the fittest, it's survival of the intelligent. And I think what this is going to do is, this natural selection is going to elevate the intelligent quotient of humankind, because all those stupid people are going to die off. And so my philosophy now is to encourage them not to get vaccinated. and absolutely, please, please do not vaccinate your children, because we want those genes out of the gene pool. We want those stupid genes.
We have an educator
genes.
With us here.
Regressive radio. I like it.
We want those genes out of the gene pool. Those stupid genes. So.
Only anyway, you could say that.
That's where I'm at.
Well, I do want to hear from our educator what Bruce thinks about your theory, Truman. I admire the outcomes.
Yes.
You know, to increase the general level of intelligence in
yes.
the community. But yeah. Bruce, what do you think? There's lots of ways to get there. How about Truman's idea?
Well, I mean, the Darwin Award was created for a purpose.
That's right. That's right.
Yes.
You know, and yeah, I mean. Yeah, you always hope that education is one of the ways to increase the general IQ, if you will, or whatever we're going to use as a measure of the general population.
Yeah.
But certainly natural selection is one way to sort of work on that.
There you go.
You know, and so Truman, maybe not far off base in terms of long-range impact. It's interesting to think about the nature of how disease and natural selection works in any population, and it's sort of nature's way of winnowing out those that are not best suited to natural selection.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that category is, and it may be maybe resistance to a novel coronaviruses, who knows, but whatever its mechanism is, we cannot trump that by science alone.
So to speak,
yeah. And one of the problems with natural selection is that it's not finite. I mean, it's not, you know, so some of the smart people are going to die in this process as well. I mean, that just happens, right? Even that big, strong deer, you know, it's going to run into a tree and break his neck. So, I mean, that happens as well. But it's a start. We got a chance here.
You know, and while we're on the topic of intelligence relative to folks, and Truman, don't get me wrong, I'm not challenging. I just want to make sure that we have
fine.
A good airing out of this theory.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about intelligence here, but will social consciousness perhaps also be an attribute that gets passed down through the genes of those who are really taking this seriously and wanting to protect not only themselves but others? Lynn, what do you think?
Well, you know, I read a great article this week. It was in the New Yorker, I believe this week's New Yorker, by Winona Duke, who is an Ojibwe warrior leader. And she is one of the water protectors and pipeline activists, who wrote one of the most blistering articles I've read published in a long time about, you know, what will it take for us to understand, you know, that water is a finite resource and that we have to take care of it. And what is the idea of sacred lands all about if we're not going to be protecting it? We're just going to go for profit straight through it. But she had a sentence in there, Truman, that I really think sort of supports what y'all are saying, which is that she said she thought that the pandemic and climate change is a portal between the old world and the new. Which, you know, I pondered that for a long time, thinking how that ties into what you're saying, that, you know, things are going to be different somehow. And she's just stomping her foot and telling people off, Truman, you know, about how we need to wake up and pay attention and act now. We cannot sleep through this.
Yeah.
And if we do, you know, Mother Nature's going to win.
Every time.
Every time.
Mother Nature always wins.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Listen to your mama.
This, So this was definitely, you know, a topic of conversation. And in my mind, it was, you know, should we reopen or remask? And we certainly heard a lot of comments from the Briefleys, but about this pandemic in general. But where do the Briefleys stand? We have this temptation, right, of we have the music in the park. We have the, although I did notice that the movies, you still have indoor and outdoor options. So Lynn has now donned her mask. And I just wanted to check where the Briefleys are at in terms of stepping out or staying in.
I'm a little of both. I kind of don't like the idea of big indoor gatherings yet. I mean, I see that as a problem. When we lifted the ban, you know, you go to the grocery store and everybody was maskless, and it was really liberating, and it was great to see people's faces. And then about 2 weeks went by and I went back, and man, everybody's masked up again, because obviously mm-hmm. we have this surge going. And so, you know, I can play the game. I hate the mask as much as anybody else, but you know, I was in the Army. I can play the game. I know how it works.
There you go. So. Yeah. Lynn?
It's interesting to me because I've been following this middle ground that seems to be emerging about more and more venues and businesses. You know, the airlines are starting to really say, don't try to get on board unless you're vaccinated. You know, we're trying to find a way to support being safe, whether that's being vaccinated and or mask. Truman, what?
Well, I think the solution to this is an economic one, if you want to know the truth. I think that the way that you make people participate is hit them in the pocketbook. So if you want to be an employee of this company, you get vaccinated. If you don't want to work, don't get vaccinated. If you want to fly on the airline, you got to be vaccinated. That's all the way.
You want to come to this concert or whatever, you have to be vaccinated.
Whatever it is, you make it economic, because economics is the only thing that affects people. I mean, social conscience does not work, period.
We've seen what that does.
Yeah, it's got to be economic. So I think that's where we've got to go. And I think that the companies are doing that. You know, there are some of the big employers are saying, hey, you want to work here? You got to be vaccinated. And it's supported.
You know? Mm-hmm. You know, and I saw this morning, I think it was this morning, but they were going into the issue about whether you're in the service, and if you are issued an order to take the COVID vaccine, do you have to take it? And the prevailing view was that absolutely you do. And not only could you be discharged, but you can be dishonorably discharged.
Absolutely.
Some examples in the past. So
I happen to find my shot record from the military. I kind of remembered seeing it, and I dug through a drawer and I found it. And I saw the number of things I've been vaccinated for, and there was no choice, man. I was in the Army. You get vaccinated for this typhus, typhoid, yellow fever, bubonic plague, diphtheria. I mean, I think there was like 8 or 9
right.
different things that I've been vaccinated for. And I'm thinking, and I'm worried about a vaccine that attacks a protein, doesn't even put a virus in your body or a bacteria. Come on. You know, what's wrong with people? Good Lord.
Maybe having all those vaccines is what caused your airplane to crash.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, there's some conspiracy theorists that might go with that, Bruce.
What do you think, Kevin? It's a great topic, I think.
Well, I will. There's a couple things. I will mention that an unnamed Thriftway worker did. I mentioned that, you know, there's a lot of folks here without masks, and the reply was, well, yeah, you know, the governor hasn't imposed the mandate yet, so we're still kind of in this mode. I'm wearing a mask, he says, and I do wear a mask because I want to set an example.
Exactly.
And this person did express some frustration with the maskless on Vashon. Now, I don't want to name this person, but, you know, these are folks who are basically earning their livelihoods, serving our community by making sure that we have food to eat on Vashon. And they're doing their part to be safe as they can in an environment that most of us can avoid. So, you know, I'm really with with the notion that we should be safer than sorry.
Yeah.
And I hope that folks will help spread that word as well.
Well, and go ahead, partially that concept of masks and vaccinations are not about you personally, but our social responsibilities to the larger community.
Right.
That's the context that we need to keep that discussion in. And that often gets lost in the sense of what is my personal freedom or my personal rights. And, you know, at some point, the interest of the community, you know, trump the interest, if I can use that word, trump the interest of the individual. And that's always a difficult terrain to navigate. But in essence, that's what it's all about. Is it all about me or is it about the community I live in?
I agree. And that's what I was going to say, is that I think it's time to take a stand. You know, instead of trying to please everybody, we've exactly. been trying to be so thoughtful and inclusive, you know, and now we're at a kind of a tipping point where if we don't take more of a stand, I think, you know, more and more of our service members, you know, if they got sick and fell in battle from something stupid.
Absolutely.
You know, what would happen? So I think it's time to take a stand and do what we need to do.
By the way, folks, Gail Kellner is one of our Brieflies, and I thought she was not going to be here today, and so I just noticed that I had not admitted her that she is here today, and I suspect that she does not realize that she's back on. But anyway, she's gone from her post there, but hopefully she'll return. If you hear a bunch of talking in the background, that's Gail coming back on, so... I apologize
All
for
right.
that. So here we go.
And for us on Zoom, we have a great view of Gail's chair.
We do.
So,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully we'll see Gail as well.
Yeah.
There well, she hey,
is.
You know, we.
There
oh, hey,
is.
Speaking
there
of
she
Gail,
is. Hi, Gail.
Hey,
no,
welcome.
She is yet to connect to audio on Zoom, so we're counting there. Hey, it's
sorry,
Gail,
we're
friend.
Really sorry, Gail. This is my fault. I didn't think you were going to be here today, and I didn't see you waiting in the waiting room. So I didn't click on you until just now. My apologies.
Oh, sure,
my
apologies.
Yeah, you know. You know.
Sure,
hey, at least I can mute you, you know, if I had to. So don't worry. No, sorry,
I've
I really
been listening
am.
In the conversation.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
And,
I'm glad.
And I was just thinking to myself, well, this is kind of a nice background to getting some of my things done around the house.
Oh, good.
About ready to dive into dishes. So thanks
sorry,
for saving
sorry,
me.
Sorry.
Well, also, Gail, what are your thoughts? You've been listening, so but you haven't had a chance to speak until now. What do you think?
Well, I was really enjoying that listening mode of just getting to take information in.
okay.
So I don't know that I'm terribly prepared, other than to say that I think that it's unfair to our to the many businesses out there that are, you know, may have to close. There was a local restaurant that had an incident of a COVID over the earlier in the week or last week, and, you know, had closed for the whole weekend under pressure from the community. And, you know, that's difficult for the business, obviously, that have been struggling anyway. And in addition, difficult for the workers who, you know, rely on that income. So I think that we have, I do, I mean, I think I'm in the mainstream here and believing that we, the mainstream on our show, that is,
yes.
believing that.
What a shock.
Vaccinating is a social responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I, honestly, what I think where rubber's going to hit the road really hard is when kids start getting sick on a regular basis and even dying. And we are seeing an uptick of that across the country. We haven't seen that yet here on Vashon, but boy, you start losing kids and there is a whole nother feeling that arises, akin to that mother bear. We are all aware, you know, that I think comes across.
We've said over and over, Gail, and I completely agree. We've said over and over again that people who are these vax deniers or all of this stuff, their opinion changes when someone that they know or in their family gets severely, severely ill from this darn thing and dies or is on a ventilator and may not live. Their attitude changes in a hurry. And, mm-hmm. and you know, how do we get that across to people without infecting somebody in their home or their their community. You know,
And it's especially difficult. Thanks, Truman. Especially difficult because, you know, right now the vaccine isn't approved for children under 12. And so those school children are vulnerable to the choices that the adults around them are making. And I think that's makes it all the more important that we step up and do our part to protect them.
You know, I have to say I was encouraged, and Truman is formerly of Texas, so I may be able to shed some insight on this story. Last night in Dallas, I believe it was, in the face of a mask mandate from Governor Abbott, the Dallas school administrator said, to heck with you, we're going to mask up. And they mentioned that the community responded in a very positive way, yeah, with only 3 students who appeared in school without masks. And so what we have is this, maybe it's a case of speaking truth to power, particularly when power is making suggestions that seem really fallacious. Any thoughts on where we stand with folks like school administrators who can defy some of these really crazy proclamations?
Well, you know, one of the things that struck me, was it in Mississippi? I can't remember now where the governor finally, I mean, the governor who was, you know, not doing a mask mandate or anything, finally said, look, you people aren't getting vaccinated or driving this thing. Get out there and, you know, you're being stupid. And finally, mm-hmm, finally, somebody in power comes around and says, duh, you know, what does it take?
Yeah, I think it would be hard to argue with somebody who's, and I'm meaning in court or wherever that battle would really play out, I think it would be hard for that person to lose because he's using safety, right, as his primary, yeah, value. Yeah. And in the healthcare field, you know, which I worked in as a social worker for a long time, what was really interesting to me is some of the same things happened around the implications or the status of people's injuries or illness, where it took a long time in which people really didn't care to be educated or they couldn't hear other people's opinions about it. Their opinions changed, Truman, as you said, when their condition got so bad it could no longer be denied. Yeah. And then they clicked into a healthcare and healthcare recovery mode, and I will do anything to, you know, stay alive. And it stopped being about ideology.
It's like the guy in the hospital who's about to get intubated saying, gosh, can I get the vaccine now? Well, what does it take, you know?
Yes.
And also put it in the context of this interesting sort of dialogue that's always going on in American politics between local control and state control.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Control. You know, states or state governors are railing against, you know, national mandates, and local authorities are railing against state mandates to not vaccinate or not mask up. And, you know, and so you get this hypocrisy within the system.
Exactly.
That's just untenable. It cannot hold. And so ultimately, we're going to have, I think local authorities are going to take charge. And that's what you're seeing with school districts, with cities, you know, defying governors who are unresponsive to the science of a pandemic. And so what's going to be interesting is what happens at the voting box, you know, mm-hmm, in 2022 and 2024. You know, are these governors, are these people who are defying science going to get booted out of office like they should be?
Yes, and thank goodness for those uppity urban liberals in Dallas who are raising
exactly,
the ruckus about this. You know, the other thing that, speaking of not only health, but businesses, and let's see, before I go there, Gail, you had a comment.
Oh, I didn't want to interrupt your flow there. And I'll just add this last thought. I think that the other unknown right now is really what the long-term COVID effects are going to be and how those may play out in ways that we don't even understand yet. That if you have a significant portion of the population suffering from the effects of long-term COVID, that may have all kinds of implications for society. But go ahead, Kevin.
Thank you. Yeah, so many considerations. I did want to kind of go not only the businesses, Gail, that you mentioned, And of course on Vashon, you know, they're on a pretty thin margin most of the time. So we need to think about all the parts of the community. But there was another business that closed temporarily in Snohomish County. This was on Susie's Instagram. A quilt shop in Snohomish County closed early because of such poor visibility due to wildfire smoke. They were concerned about their customers' danger driving on the roads. So, you know, we've been, I think, knock on wood. I have wood. Knock on wood.
You can knock on tile.
So whatever you need to knock on. You know, I think we have been pretty fortunate so far this summer in terms of avoiding the smoke. But I don't know, are we briefly checking the air quality before going out? What do you think, Truman?
Well, I was just going to say, a couple of years ago, we were down in Ashland for the Shakespeare Festival, and one performance closed, right? Mid-performance, because the wildfire smoke was getting bad enough that the actors, because they have to, you know, project so with their voices, they were having to take in so much air that they were saying it's very unhealthy for our actors and we're going to stop. And so, I mean, this is the real thing, man. I mean, it's affecting us all.
Well, I came home from, you know, my Holden Village retreat with a whopping case of bronchitis that I attribute to wildfire smoke, because in driving through Wenatchee, it was pea soup. It was so dense and thick. I literally missed my exit where you have to go from 97 back onto Highway 2. And they've done some work there, I admit, but I couldn't see at all, which meant I had to pull over and try to figure out where I was and, you know, try to get back on the freeway and breathe in that disgusting air. And when I came home and was starting to cough and hack, and sent me to, you know, getting two negative COVID tests, there were just big black specks, you know, in my effluence, can we call it that? Yeah. It's disgusting. Yeah. But I think that, you know, the air stank here a couple of days ago. You could smell it, and I wouldn't be out in it at all. It's kind of terrifying, and we have been really lucky in the way the prevailing winds have blown. But, you know, other people don't have any choice in that, and they're trying to figure out where they can go and what they can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I would just add again, you know, the long-term effects of wildfire smoke may not be that different than the long-term effects of cigarette smoke, which we, you know, some of that is immediate in things like cases of bronchitis or people, quite a large uptick in people passing both due to heat and as well as
right,
the smoke.
Exactly.
But also the long-term damage done to our lungs, especially I think of young people who will be potentially enduring this for the next coming decades. So accumulating those carcinogens in their bodies.
Right.
Yeah. So we talk about people waking up, and you know, the climate crisis is also. I had an opportunity at the Vashon Maury Island Community Council last night to have a conversation with a climate challenger, if not a climate denier. So,
oh gosh,
you know, there's still folks who are still kind of not sure about where we stand on that. But maybe. Maybe the mask thing, we can encourage more people to mask up, because not only are they saving themselves from a possible COVID in a session, but they're also keeping themselves safe from the wildfire smoke. So mask up. There's all kinds of benefits, right, to masking up.
Yeah. And the air, you know, I think just, gosh, not to be the one bringing up all the sad, bad news, but, you know, that is not just it's not just wood smoke in the air. I mean, when these towns are burning buildings filled with all kinds of chemicals and
lead paint,
really unknown things, that are all of that is up in the air, and all of that's coming back down on us, and we're breathing it in. So it's I strongly encourage anyone out there listening that if the air quality drops, to be wearing a mask outside and to find ways to clean the air as much as you can inside your homes.
All right. Well, we've hit social responsibility, we've hit healthcare, but we haven't talked as much about politics, although I think you've heard the word Trump used now five times because of what I just said on the show today. But hey, we did have a primary election not long ago, and a couple of things. We, King County Executive, our Senator Nguyen, was challenging our Executive Constantine, and Dow came out 51.9% in the primary. King County Council, we've got all the incumbents. It look like they're going to be staying ahead, with one exception in District 3, which is Sammamish, North Bend, and Duval, where incumbent Lambert is challenged by challenger Sarah Perry, and they're only separated by 4%. And the other thing, and Lynn, you mentioned the Seattle mayor's, some of the issues around the Seattle's mayor race regarding homelessness and some of the things.
Right.
Harrell and Gonzalez are now within a couple of points. Any thoughts or comments about where we're headed in terms of the election coming up in November?
I'm just watching Bruce. Yeah, come on in.
My sense is, I mean, people are going for certainty. You know, these are highly uncertain times. You know, people are going for the tried and true. People are going for the known. And I think those who are at the end of the spectrum on either side, to the right or the left, are going to have trouble convincing people that they can lead into this uncertain future. So I think it's a time for the centerist to step forward and take charge.
Yeah.
And I think you saw that in part with the Biden election. I think you're going to see it even more powerfully in the 2022 midterm elections and then in the 2024 elections. You know, these are uncertain times. And, you know, yeah, it's, as a progressive, I think it's time for some real dramatic change. But in reality, for most people, they're looking for certainty.
I was going to say Donald Trump taught us that. I mean, we said, let's give the guy a chance. And whew, was that a mistake?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you roll the dice and you never know what can happen.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, what are your thoughts?
Well, I appreciate the thought about the center and people going for what's safe. But unfortunately, the center has led us to exactly where we are right now. With climate change, the status quo is a result of that kind of not reaching for something better. So I'm still a very big believer that sometimes we need to get out of our comfort zones and that we need to move in a much more progressive direction. I think Trump, unfortunately, is a poor example of what could have been by almost any other Republican. You know, I mean, he doesn't really represent anything but crazy. And whereas I think had we had, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, I think that you would have seen a completely different kind of evolutionary change that did not look crazy, but in fact, I believe would have been moving us forward in the way that we need to move at a relatively brisk pace, given how quickly climate change and climate chaos is unfolding.
Yeah, Lynn, your thoughts?
Well, I think that we're sort of at a very critical point here, both this argument about centrist and progressives. I have always felt like I've been tremendously progressive all my life and standing up for change. And I find myself going more centrist, not so much for safety and security, but to be practical and try to get enough people on board who are willing to vote for a Democratic candidate that they have a chance of winning and, being an open party that can be an umbrella under which a lot of different people can be. And I think that in electing a sort of a centrist president, you know, there's still voice for the progressive. There's still lots of opportunity to enact progressive legislation if they can get the votes for it and, make some demonstration projects very visible. I don't see it as the end of progressivism. I think it's the survival of progressives when we look for a centrist. And so for me, it's a practical matter. And I feel very sorry, for example, for Biden, who's now being excoriated for getting us out of Afghanistan and for the way he got us out of Afghanistan, when we have talked for 20 years about getting out of Afghanistan and not wanting to hear about, you know, those people over there across the world, that a lot of our progressive ideas to me are lovely and wonderful ideals, but they are not the opinion of everyone. And so, you know, we're kind of back into a very gritty kind of warfare between regressive, you know, kind of reactionary people wanting not only safety, but they want a return to the past. And I think that's, to me, why centrism has taken hold.
You know, Lynn, I really admire your view of government, because I think that government can be an enabling and benefiting capability, even though everything has its challenges, I'll put it that way. But I just wanted to contrast that with a fellow that a colleague of mine before I retired, whose sole voting strategy was to elect people who wouldn't get along so the government couldn't do anything. Ooh, and couldn't mess up his life.
Sinister.
So there's a certain amount of privilege that's now reflected. He was a white male, as I am. But yeah, I just have to say, Lynn, I really admire that the hope that you engender in how we can find folks in elected office to lead us that will cooperate and find a path forward through the challenges we face.
Hard to maintain hope. I don't know if I would call it hope so much as this clinging to the Warren Court. You know, when I grew up, it was an extremely progressive time with extremely progressive judges and legislators, and we have drifted so far to the right, all of us, that Gail, I lament that I don't feel that way so much anymore in terms of being extremist, because I keep seeing, you know, some of the politicians that I have backed, you know, just lose. And I just think we're clinging to survival right now. And like Winona Duke, you know, I cling to my hope with a huge degree of slapping people in the face and saying it can't continue to be the kind of, you know, sleepy centrism that maintains the status quo. I really believe what you said about that. I agree.
And also, it's a false equivalence to try and align the status quo with centrism. You know, centrism is not the status quo. Centrism is about appealing to the most people,
right,
and bringing along the body of the population along with the changes you want to create, not with leaving them behind or saying that they're not smart enough or they're not capable of making these changes. So you create a false equivalency.
That's a great distinction.
Align those two. And I find that that's disrespectful of voters.
It's really a good distinction.
You know, Bruce, I've in the past railed again, not, you know, railed at my television set, listening to the nightly news about the legislator or congressperson who's saying, well, I'm not part of the problem because I introduced legislation that would take care of this issue, and somehow convincing the listeners that just because they put a position forward that doesn't have the support of a majority is somehow okay. You know, and as Lynn, you point out, our series of government requires a majority to move forward. And just, you know, saying that you put your finger in the water doesn't seem to me to be adequate in terms of the challenges we face right now.
No, and that's sort of the challenge, I think, of both the right and the left, is how do you get the center to move with you?
Exactly.
You know, you're not going to get change without having the center move. And you've already seen tremendous change occur on all levels. Not that we don't have a long way to go, but in terms of racial justice, in terms of economic justice, in terms of environmental justice, we've made great strides. I mean, go back 50 years or 100 years or 150 years, none of us would want to live in those societies. But at the same time, we've got a huge way to go. and we need to recognize that. And we need to move the center where we want the center to be. And that's the challenge. And yeah, I mean, politicians can say, well, I introduced this legislation. And like you said, Kevin, that's great. But they got to line up the votes to make that legislation law. And that's the challenge. And that's the challenge we need to bring the center to our progressive point of view.
Yes, and I would like to dip into the, and Lynn, I'll come right back to you, but I do want to go into the shameless self-promotion segment of the program here, because speaking of legislators and voting and things, tonight at 7 o'clock, there is a town hall presented by the Washington Indivisible Network, and it's featured, and in a minute, I'll tell you how to register, so listeners, get your pencils out. The key legislators like Senator Emily Randall, Noel Frame, Jesse Johnson, and possibly our Representative Fitzgibbon are going to be talking about the work that they're planning for the 2022 legislative session coming up just next January. And for example, Major Jeffrey Floor was on the community council last night talking about the newly passed bill 1310, which de-escalation tactics for the police, not only, you know, in all of these states where we're in areas where we're seeing uprisings protests, but right here in Vashon, he talked about how his officers are basically using this law to address what we've talked about before is individual on Vashon who was disruptive and causing damage. And talked about a mental health first aid, and saying that this needs to be addressed in the legislature. We need to fine tune this legislation. So it's a very real thing that affects all of us. So register for that at bit.ly/WWEG_2020, bit.ly/WAWLEG_2020. And I hope that you'll have a chance to join us.
Okay, but, do it one more time, please.
I will. It is bit.ly/WWEG_2022. I said 2020. It's actually 2022.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Truman. Mm-hmm. All right, we got just a couple minutes left. Lynn, you had a comment, and then I want to go into what could be worse. So go ahead, Lynn.
Oh, gosh. Just quickly, I think what sprang into my mind as we were talking about centrism and progressivism was that I think I saw Bernie Sanders, for example, as a prophet, that we sometimes have to hear somebody coming in with very strong ideas about where we go wrong and what could be, not only what could be worse, but what could be. And then it plants a seed in us that hopefully takes fruit, if not then, somewhere down the road. And I think we ignore the politicians that, or we ignore those politicians at our peril that are, yes, that are telling us the vision of the future, good or bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the what could be worse, and I know we're just at the last moment, but the fourth Trump reinstatement day, August 13, has now passed. And Truman, you may or may not have time to tell us what's the flick on that from your Army buddies, but if not today, maybe next week.
I've not heard a word. Thank you. But I'm thankful for that. But hey, here we are, out of time, folks. See you all next week.
Into the future.